Matt Schauff here with Alex Korf, King Nerd at DraftSharks.com. We're talking NFL draft prospects and specifically the Draft Sharks rookie model. There are a lot of ways, of course, to measure prospects, lots of stats you can look at, lots of ways to, you know, break them down. That, of course, also means there are a lot of ways to insert your own bias into your rankings. And Alex, we want to remove as much bias as possible from our rankings. And that's really the point of building something like this rookie model, right?
Yeah. The goal of it was to remove any analysis biases that we can along the way. So we really split up a lot of these different pieces of this model, whereas like I won't look at film or anything ahead of time just to make sure that I'm not biasing any of the data that's coming out on these guys.
And of course, I call him King Nerd because he's the model builder. I know how models work. Well, no, I know that models work. I don't know how they work. I don't know how to build them, but they sure are helpful. And this one in particular, we're going to break down exactly what goes in and how you use it. There are three primary buckets to the Draft Sharks prospect model: analytics, film, and draft capital. All those things important to a prospect and his NFL and fantasy outlook. Subsections, of course, within each that we will get to. And like I said, we're here to break down exactly what feeds into the model and how you should use the results that come out. Alex, first bucket is analytics, and that starts with a production score. What is a player's production score, and how weighted is that to his final college season versus his entire career?
It's not a secret. Productive college player or productive NFL players tended to be productive in college. Shocking, I know. So what we want to look at is what kind of production they had, you know, yards per route run, looking at a lot in their final season or their best season, depending on how it went. A lot of the time we'll have to put a caveat if someone got hurt and look at the previous season. I think JSN last year, he got hurt. So we had to look at his previous season. That happens sometimes, but a lot of time we want to look at both how they progressed over their career as well as their final season with a little bit more weight there.
And that's an important thing to point out. If a guy did have a rough final year in college, we're not dinging him for that. We're finding ways to get around that and actually measure what he did do when he was on the field. We've run those numbers, the early numbers for this year, top five in production score in the model so far: Brock Bowers, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Malik Nabers, Marvin Harrison Jr. And some other things are going to change. Production score is not going to change because none of these guys are producing any yardage from this point on in their college careers. Athleticism score: we like productive players. We also like players that can move around. Alex, what goes into each player's athleticism score?
Athleticism is maybe a little too generic. It's looking at how they tested as well as their size. If someone's super small, but like tests like a, you know, a freak athlete, they aren't going to have a perfect score just because maybe they're 5'6" and 140 pounds, like something that we don't see prototypically in the NFL. So it's a mix of those two things. But really what we're doing is we're looking at historical player comps and who were successful in the NFL, and then looking to see how these incoming prospects look compared to them in terms of size as well as speed, any measurable we get from the combine, or if we can't get it from their combine, sadly from their pro day with a little asterisk or a little less weight in it.
Athleticism might not be the exact term for it, but it's a good one for testing my pronunciation on the video. You mentioned that it depends on a player's size. It also differs by position, right? We're not using the same measure for a tight end as a running back.
Yeah, exactly. And it matters a lot less, for example, at the wide receiver position, depending on the archetype of wide receiver. But for running backs, and tight ends in particular, we really care about their athleticism. We've seen, especially tight ends, if you're an athletic freak, you have a better chance of being very productive in the NFL, which is what we want.
And according to the model results for this year, Devin Culp is one of those tight ends that might stand out as a freak athlete that does something in the NFL. He is among eight players who come out with an athleticism score of 0.8 or higher. He's joined by running back Isaac Garendo. People, I think, will be familiar with that guy as a speedster and good tester who did not produce in college. And we'll, you know, talk more about that elsewhere. Wide receiver Xavier Worthy is also up in that top eight. Running back Jalen Wright, wide receivers Anthony Gould and Brian Thomas Jr., wide receiver Adonai Mitchell, and quarterback J.J. McCarthy, interestingly, tops that position in athleticism. That could be a reason to like his fantasy upside beyond what the production might have said from his college career. Film grade is the next bucket here. And of course, film breakdown is part of each of our prospect profiles. also called Dynasty Value Reports, but those aren't what go into the film grade here. We actually look at film grades from pro film grinders because those guys watch more film, have been doing it longer, have given us reason to trust them to varying degrees. Alex, who gets counted in this film grade?
The two big ones, PFF, they grade every game for several seasons. So we'll look through those, and there's kind of like a weighted average by position. And then Lance over at NFL.com, I'm not going to say his last name incorrectly, but he's another one that has a lot of weight depending on the position. And then there's a couple others that have a less weight, but also pop up, but they're not as important as those two major ones.
And of course, every year, I think we get the analytics versus film argument, which is stupid because you should be including both of those things. You can't just go analytics and ignore what a guy looks like on the field. And if you're old school and you think, oh, my eyes tell me everything I need to know, then you're an idiot because it does not tell you everything. And the film can definitely lie. So we include all of it. We're looking at all of it. We feed all of it into the model and try to get these outputs. The leaders in film grade this year, 8 guys scored 0.6 or higher in our film grade. That's Malik Nabers, Jaden Daniels, Marvin Harrison Jr., Caleb Williams, Rome Odunze, Brock Bowers, Drake May, and Bo Nix, an interesting one. I think that's probably weighted more toward the end of his career. And maybe the bigger question with him is why he didn't do it for more of his career than just the end at Oregon. But, you know, interesting nonetheless that he scored so well in film grade.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see. His prospect score can change significantly depending on where he gets drafted. Once you have a film grade that high, if he goes higher than we're anticipating, he's going to be very interesting to me. But right now, I'm kind of looking at that film grade and it's almost disproportionately high compared to the rest of his profile. It's interesting. It made me look twice.
One other item is better on film. Now, I can tell intuitively what that means, but what specifically does that mean that we're figuring out here?
Kind of a key indicator that I like to use, in particular if you're looking for sleepers or some late round guys, I'm looking at players that are statistically significantly better scored on film than they did analytically. So their production or their athleticism were a little low, but their film scores were high. What this does is it allows you to just look for guys that maybe were held back for some reason. Maybe they tested poorly or something, but they popped on film. Some guys over the last 3 years that tested significantly better on film than everywhere else. Devin Achane, Rashad White, Brian Robinson, Ramondre Stevenson, Kyren Williams, Jerome Ford, Amon-Ra, Puka, Keaton Mitchell, all of those guys tested better and flagged in the model for being better on film because they had something maybe a little bit off on their analytical profile. So I usually will use those to definitely target guys in the third or fourth round or maybe late second that maybe didn't quite have the draft capital. This year, some players that scored better on film, Estime, Ray Davis, Javon Baker, Will Shipley, Tyrone Tracy, Cody Schrader, Quan Jackson. Some guys that I really am going to have a lot of equity in late in rookie drafts for sure.
Yeah, anything that includes uncovering Amon-Ra St. Brown and Puka Nacua is certainly worth looking at going forward.
Draft capital is the third component.
And it's important. How important is draft capital to our outputs here?
Well, the answer is it depends by position. So for example, wide receiver, running back, quarterback, it has a little bit more weight than tight end. Quarterback in particular has very high and then a little bit less at running back, but it's really like the 101 in the NFL has the most weight. And if someone's going in like the fourth or fifth round for a running back, that value doesn't change much fourth versus fifth. So it has a lot of weight, really, because if you look at data over the last 20 years, draft capital is one of the best indicators of actual NFL success. So it's silly not to include it in your model. Don't double count it. You have to be smart about it. But really, that's what we're trying to do is have a model that's a little bit better than draft capital. So that means we have to use draft capital.
Right. It obviously makes sense to count it more heavily if you go first in round one versus 20th in round one. It does not matter as much if you're going first in round four as opposed to 20th in round four. At that point, teams vary quite a bit in how they value players. And, you know, players from that point vary quite a bit in what they end up doing in the NFL. There are already model scores out there. Obviously, we don't have draft capital yet. So how do you figure that out when you don't yet have draft landing spots?
I use NFL mock draft database.com as the quasi draft capital ahead of time. And you can see that even shift. If I ran the model, I ran the model originally in like March 1st and then ran it again right around April 1st. And some players really jumped just because they were getting more steam. But really, the initial pre NFL draft scores are more of an estimate. It's the real, the post NFL those are the values that we really have a little bit more confidence in.
It makes sense. And of course we will be running these again during the NFL draft. We get updated numbers as we go there. that's going to mean big changes for certain players. Do you have any examples from 2023, any guy that jumped way up or fell way down based on draft capital that differed from expectation? Probably Will Levis would stand out as one, right? I think we, at this point last year, we were assuming he was a round one guy, and then he went in round two.
I think the pre-draft, he was mocked at 104 even. Like, it was, he was getting crazy high. I think there was that Reddit thread that said he was going to go 101 to the Panthers or something, and he flew up the board. Another one was Gibbs. He was not mocked to go 12th overall. He was first round. I think he was 20th maybe to the Patriots or something. So he moved up a bunch, right, going 12th overall. Jalen Hyatt fell a little bit more than was projected originally. There was some chance of maybe late first, second, and he fell, what, all the way to the third round, I think.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see some similar wide receiver changes to that this year, because I think there are a lot of guys that are talked about as though they could go late in round one, but very easily could go late in day two instead because of size or whatever. So we take the draft capital, we take film grade, we take the analytics score, we put all of those together, and they produce the model score for each player. And right now we've got Caleb Williams and Brock Bowers leading the entire group this year. Probably not shocking anybody. Both of those guys have been talked about as top level prospects really for any year. There's separation between the top three wide receivers and the next group. That's, of course, Harrison, Neighbors, and Rome Odunze. And then after that, there's a gap between Odunze and Brian Thomas Jr. and everybody else. All four quarterbacks, interestingly, rank among our top eight overall in model score. If we look back, Alex, at last year, we had our top three quarterbacks among the top five overall, and then Will Levis was 18th. So if everybody, I guess, had looked at the model score with us, maybe more people would have realized at that point that Will Levis really didn't belong with the top three quarterbacks in that draft.
I mean, draft capital in particular for quarterbacks, we really want to see early first round if we can. And the cutoff between pick 32 in the first round and then even 201 in the second round is huge, because that fifth year option had a lot of weight effectively in the model. Like, that's the philosophy behind that one. But yeah, Levis is, he was an interesting one, and I still don't know how I feel about him overall, but the model didn't really love him.
Yeah. There's nothing not interesting about him though. That's for sure. Now, agreement factor we alluded to earlier, that's something else. It's not one of the buckets that we score these guys by, but it's worth looking at after we get the results. What is agreement factor in the Draft Sharks rookie model?
We talked about those pillars, the film versus analytics, and then production and athleticism, as well as draft capital. And what we're doing is we're looking at the difference in those scores versus each other, right? Effectively the standard deviation, but it's a normalized factor, 0 to 5. So if they have a score of 5, that means all of the pillars, all of the pieces of their profile pretty well lined up. That could be good. if they have a good score, it could be bad if they have a terrible score. So for example, there's some guys that are graded out at like a 5.5, you know, practice squad player. Everyone agrees that they're in fact that, like, good. Everyone agrees, but you're not good. So what we want is we want to use that as an indicator of maybe high confidence in a player. Or if someone has obnoxiously low or very low, take a look at, see what's going on. Usually something's off. Maybe they're not athletic, or maybe they had no production. Like Anthony Richardson had no production in college. So his agreement factor is one of the lowest of any we saw.
Yeah, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. It just means that there's one thing that's out of line with the rest of them. And we knew with Anthony Richardson that he did not have nearly as much starting experience and thus not nearly as much production. So that's a potential risk factor, but you have to consider that with how high he went in the draft and the upside. And I think all of us still liked him fairly high. Other examples from last year, among the higher level prospects, we had strong agreement scores for Zay Flowers, Jahmyr Gibbs, Tucker Kraft, I think was interesting. He didn't go until round three, but maybe that high agreement should tell you, in combined with him sitting decently high in our model score last year, that he had some of the upside that he did flash once he got that opportunity during the season. This year, among early round guys, we've got high agreement on Rome Odunze. He looks like that type of prospect where film guys love him, the numbers like him. He looks like he's going to be a high draft pick, looks like a fairly safe prospect. On the other hand, low agreement factors for Xavier Worthy and Bo Nix. Not necessarily meaning that you need to drop those guys down your rankings, but you'll want to give them a second look to see why there is that disagreement and what that should mean for where you draft.
Yeah. It makes me want to look at those guys to see why are they so low, and can you explain it away? Like, could you explain away Anthony Richardson's low production? Yes. Can you explain away Xavier Worthy's. I mean, just look into it. It's really a flag. Hey, pay attention to this is what I use it for.
Yeah. And you can definitely check the site to find more about those. We'll discuss more about those model scores. Those model scores show up in various places. The biggest area that helps is our rookie rankings, of course, but that doesn't mean that our rookie rankings are just the model output in order, right? Why not just take the model scores and slap the guys on the page in that order?
I mean, there's no art to that, and ranking and doing projections, honestly, there's a lot of science behind it, but at the end of the day, it's an art. It's you have to figure that out. So the goal of the rookie model is really just give the tools to help make more informed decisions. But at the end of the day, it's a piece of the puzzle, not the entire puzzle.
Yeah. And what I like about it is it's all these inputs that feed in, spit out a number that I then have to decide whether I'm going with, especially if it disagrees with how I thought of a player going in. I either need to decide whether I just had the wrong opinion and I need to shift it based on these factors, or why I think a guy is going to be different than where he comes out in that model score output. So however you use it, exactly how things sort out, it's a valuable tool in putting together these rookie rankings, in deciding what to expect from these players, and ultimately how to draft them. You can see the model score numbers in our prospect profiles, which are also called Dynasty Value Reports. Those are live on the site now. You can look at all of this year's. You can look back at last year's. We keep those up. You can also find model scores for the top 50 ranked prospects in our rookie guide, which is brand new for this year. That's yours for free. All you have to do is join our email list. And, you know, don't worry. It's not the kind of email list where we're then going to ping you every day with something stupid. We don't want to bug anybody in email. We just want to send you breaking news when it happens. We want to give you helpful fantasy football info throughout the summer, get you ready to draft, and help you throughout the season. So join up, you get the free rookie guide, you get more of this model score stuff, and check our rookie rankings to see exactly what we think of all these players. For Alex Korf and everybody else at DraftSharks.com, thanks for listening.